Okay. Hi. Thank you very much for inviting me to this gathering and my first time in Moscow. I want to give you a perspective in terms of how factoring developed in the UK and some of the mistakes that we made. It's been very interesting listening to the conversations earlier, and some of these are very enlightening to me. I'll give you a little bit about what we're going to talk about, and I've been told to shorten this very much. So first of all, it's about Atlantic, what we do. A UK perspective, I may touch on some war stories with plenty of blood, and critical elements of risk management, and I want to talk a little bit about fraud. A lot to get into, 15 minutes, I think. I know most of you can't read this, but I'll use this as my prompt. About Atlantic, we're the largest provider of services of this type in Europe. We work for UK and US institutions, and you probably recognize some of the major names we work for. I'm going to just do a very, very quick history of the UK. In the 1960s, factoring began. The market drivers were access to automated sales ledger management, credit protection, and cash. Cash has always been important, and was mainly started by independent finance companies. In the 1960s, we found that factoring was in garments and textiles, construction, advertising revenues, engineering products. The industry was labor and paper intensive. We also had offer and acceptance factoring. And I was very interested to hear one of my co-speakers speaking about. It was only in the 1970s that we discovered this concept of sell and forget. And the way we describe that is, upon the delivery of the goods or services, there is no further obligation on the part of the seller. But it took us about 10 years to work that one out. In the 1970s, our experiences showed us that not all sectors, not all types of business were ideal for factoring. And there was a move also towards a recourse environment, whereas in the 60s there was a lot of non-recourse business done. And we also saw that the banks started to take an interest and started buying up factories, so the market grew on the back of the banks. Another comment that came from earlier conversations was that most of the banks in the UK were sensible enough not to try and control them. So the factoring companies still remained independent of banking controls and still remained entrepreneurial. And in the 70s, we saw that they changed to whole turnover, whereas instead of just being able to take any invoices, factors realized it was safer to have an agreement with the client where all of the sales were notified to them and they had a higher level of control, because they lost money doing it the other way. In the 1980s, we saw technology impact. SMEs now had access to computers. The requirement for automation from a factor disappeared, and invoice discounting or receivables finance emerged. And factoring and discounting, therefore, also became more automated. So, you know, there is the possibility here also for automated chaos. In fact, the turnover rose from 2.4 billion euros to 12 billion euros in the 1980s. As factoring became more widespread and automated, so did the incidence and level of fraud, because volumes grew, turnover grew, therefore it was more difficult to control. So we started seeing in the 1980s significant bad debts, when bad debts really cost factors a lot of money, and some factors in the UK closed because the balance sheets were wiped out by bad debt. But also, as we saw automation, we saw more sophisticated risk management, because they had to cope with higher levels of volume, more challenging clients and bigger clients. So we saw audit and survey techniques being introduced. We saw trend analysis and credit and underwriting protocols come in. Before, factoring was very, very much localized and based upon some form of black art. So as we came into the 80s, now it became more sophisticated. In the 90s, factory and invoice discounting volumes were level. So by this time, invoice discounting had caught up with factoring in terms of the amount of business done. By the year 2000, we saw factoring volumes of now 60 billion euros, and asset-based lending emerged. And Eric referred earlier to the concept of asset-based lending. But while the industry grew, we moved from a market that was a big deal was maybe, a million euros, to big deals becoming 10 million euros. And today we see deals of many hundred million euros, still using the basic principle of receivables finance. So therefore, the fraud increased. And again, it became even more difficult. As there was this proliferation in the marketplace, on the back of automation, we also saw that the industry fell short of talent, short of skills. And again, I hear this today in Russia, that as your industry expands, how do you produce the people that can understand and manage clients and manage risk? So today, there are 56 providers of factoring and discounting in the UK. They service 48,782 businesses. They advance 20 billion euros. Factoring invoice discounting volumes are now 215 billion euros. So the big deal is now common, single exposure is 15 to 120 billion euros. But what is significant is that last year the industry wrote off around about 200 million euros through problems, through bad debts.
Oh. It's gone the other way.
Excuse me. Something's going on. Good, okay. I will just want to talk a little bit about, we talked about risk, and of that figure, when we look at where the losses occur in our factoring, in our invoice discounting, operational risk is only about 3%. And operational risk is where we get it wrong in terms of our systems and our data. Now, obviously, we come from a market which is very mature, which has spent a lot of time and effort creating these. Credit risk, in terms of the customer risk, again, is significant, but again, it's only around about 8% of losses. Product risk, i.e. dispute with the goods, causing bad debts, is around about 11%. But management risk, fraud, in the UK right now, is around about 78%. And what I think that indicates to you is that in a market where the things that the industry can control, as it has become mature, as it has become experienced, it manages quite well. The things that it finds difficult to control are the people that run the clients that they finance. What's going on here? I may not have time for some war stories, but there's a few things there where we've seen some of the reasons behind the frauds. We've seen extortion, we've seen business problems where they've built too much stock, so they use fraud against the factor to finance working capital. We've seen people with addictions, cocaines and Ferraris. We saw a guy who became addicted to, he got divorced, so he got addicted to somebody else, and he was also addicted to buying a steam train, so he frauded the factor for around about 1.4 million euros. We saw some guys that were into,
what's going on?
Sorry, this keeps going wrong. God. We saw some guys that were into skateboard and clothing and garments. Again, they bought too many skateboards and they committed fraud. We saw a fabricator making telecommunications units, and they made too many, and then they were rejected, and they committed fraud. And we saw a vehicle distribution business where they were taking in cars, servicing cars, and then delivering cars, and they had a premeditated fraud. So I'm just going to go quickly through what I think the critical elements of risk management. First of all, sell and forget transactions. Debt and debtor verification or validation. Understand the paper. Understand the reason you're giving the customer the money. This is a wider question in terms of, a lot of times we think we're financing growth, but maybe we're financing other things. Have good client and collateral audit. And make sure that you have predictive trend analysis. You need robust risk management protocols, and I won't go into all the details of that because that would take me a little bit of time. And we need to understand timelines, and I'm going to do a quick thing on timelines. My understanding is that if you understand risk, then your control should increase as risk increases. You can't just keep doing the same thing. This understands how quality of the ABL market, and this is the client, it's graded from 1 to 8, and the and our market operates in around about 4 to 7. 8 has gone bust. And this is what we see in a typical client. It joins, it gets better, it gets worse, and then fails. Some clients just get better. And this is how every new business proposition describes a new customer. Sometimes they get really bad, they're called a dog. And sometimes we're told they're a star, but really they're a dog. And the gap between our understanding is the size of the amount of money we lose. This is how some factors get away from having a dog, they give the dog to another factor. And just to talk about fraud, there are two types. There are circumstantial, because of business conditions, and there is premeditated, which is where they are set out to commit fraud straight away. Remember, people commit fraud. Understanding personal motivation is important. Premeditated is driven purely by money. And normally it's bigger and quicker. Circumstantial is triggered by an event or business problems. And sometimes a failure in lenders' controls. We've talked about the type of thing that causes fraud, and those of you can read English, we talk about divorce and blackmail and lifestyle and losses and failed business strategy and addictions. We haven't got time for that. But what I just want to leave you with is that you are in a very, very fast, exciting and developing market in factoring in Russia. But remember that the leading edge is also the bleeding edge. Thank you. I'll take questions if you have any.
Пожалуйста, есть ли вопросы?
Окей.
What is a product risk? Can you describe it to us? What is a product risk? Can you describe to us what is a product risk?
You mentioned the product risk in your set of risks. What's that?
The product risk is when
микрофончик ему попросите девушку принести. Девушку.
All right. Now you
can you hear me now? Yeah? Okay, the product risk is when the seller sells the goods, but the customer doesn't want to pay for them because they're not the right goods or the goods are ordered. When we understand credit risk, we talk about ability to pay and willingness to pay. Ability to pay is through credit information. Willingness to pay is about the right goods at the right time.
Да, пожалуйста.
Based on your experience, what is the biggest size of a fraud?
Can someone translate that? My experience is probably the biggest. We dealt with a... I have nothing.
Unfortunately.
It was a $40 million fraud, and it was involved in the fruit and vegetable distribution, and in the UK, and it was importing and distributing fruit. It had a legitimate business that it was okay, which was local distribution, and it had an international business where it was shipping goods into most of Europe. What was happening was that they were delivering goods out of Africa, and these goods were hitting the European customers. The European customers were then paying those goods to the African company, but the UK company then invoiced those goods through the factoring arrangement, and it went unchecked for maybe 2 years. That was interesting.
And what happens with factoring company?
What happened? Well, that factoring company was a US-owned institution, and they're still trading. Just
good experience.
Еще вопросы есть?
Any more questions, please?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Еще раз большое спасибо.
Once again, thank you.